Court, Your Honors. Barry Schultz on behalf of the plaintiff, Shirley Scott. In this case, the administrative law judge found that Ms. Scott suffers from major depressive disorder, low back pain, hypertension, mild arthritis, and non-severe tremors in the hands. The claimant's treating psychiatrist actually diagnosed the plaintiff with bipolar disorder and depression with psychosis. Because this is a mixed case of physical and mental impairments, I'm going to start with the physical impairments in that the ALJ's residual functional capacity findings don't find any support in this record. In the non-precedential case of Swede versus Astru, which we cite in the brief, this court found that when the ALJ rejected the opinion of a treating doctor, the problem wasn't necessarily in rejecting that doctor's opinion, but it was with the evidentiary deficit that was left. Because ALJs aren't doctors, they're not medical practitioners, they don't have independent knowledge of how much somebody can lift, how long somebody can stand. And if an ALJ does not rely on any medical opinion as to functional capacity, but in addition rejects the plaintiff's testimony as to how much they can lift and how long they can stand and walk, as happened in this case, they're left really with nothing on which to base their residual functional capacity assessment.
Well, the government's response to that is that there's Dr. Villanueva's examination and a number of other examinations regarding physical limitations that found the muscular skeletal system was within normal limits. She had flexible range of motion, etc.
But the problem with that is that Dr. Villanueva did not give an opinion as to how much the plaintiff could lift or how long she could stand. The administrative law judge somehow found that Ms. Scott could lift 20 pounds. Well, why 20 pounds and not 15 pounds or 10 pounds? Why can she stand for 6 hours a day and not only 3 hours a day or 4 hours a day? The ALJ found that Ms. Scott does suffer from severe low back pain and arthritis, that those are severe impairments. So there has to be some basis, whether it's the claimant's testimony or her daily activities or something, in which to find she can specifically lift a certain amount. The ALJ has no independent knowledge of that, and she didn't rely on anything in this record in reaching that conclusion. Also, this court in the Briscoe XRL Taylor case, also cited in the brief, versus Barnhart, relying on Social Security ruling 96-8P, this court stated that an ALJ has to explain how she reached her residual functional capacity assessment. And again, that was not done in this case. Additionally, we have a somewhat familiar issue in this case in that the plaintiff has a treating psychiatrist who had treated her for a couple of years, and after, I believe, seeing her on 7 occasions and prescribing significant psychotropic medication for her, provided an opinion. And that opinion was that Ms. Scott had marked limitations in social functioning and frequent, which was the equivalent of marked in the prior regulations, frequent episodes or frequent difficulties with concentration, persistence, and pace. Also, in her opinion, Ms. Scott would be absent from work at least 3 times a month due to her psychiatric impairments and other significant limitations. The ALJ rejected the treating psychiatrist's opinion and instead adopted the opinion of a medical expert who was a non-examining psychologist. But interestingly, in this case, the psychologist actually only disagreed with the conclusions of the medical expert in terms of the treating psychiatrist, in terms of how severe the limitations were. When the medical expert said that she wouldn't have diagnosed Ms. Scott with bipolar disorder, but that clearly the treating doctor diagnosed her with bipolar disorder and was prescribing significant medication to treat bipolar disorder. In addition, the medical expert said, well, while she wouldn't have considered the plaintiff's statements about her, the voices that she hears and things like that, to be psychosis, but the treating psychiatrist did. And then when the ALJ directly asked the medical expert, well, do you disagree with the diagnosis of bipolar disorder? The medical expert said, well, no, I can't say that I disagree with that. Well, this is exactly the kind of...
Dr. Rosenfeld did point out there wasn't any evidence of manic episodes, right?
in her opinion.
Is there evidence from any other source about that?
Well, in the treating doctor's opinion, in treatment notes, Dr. Tate's, there's frequent references to positive mood swings.
Doesn't Dr. Tate refer to mixed episodes?
There is a reference to mixed episodes.
And aren't mixed episodes the equivalent of manic periods?
Yes. That's correct. And she does have mood swings. She's irritable.
She doesn't have extreme manic behavior, though.
I believe that's correct, yeah. Yes. I think there was only one episode. I mean, early on, before she started getting her the medications, she would stay up for 2 or 3 days at a time, which may be fairly extreme. But that was tempered with the medication.
She takes her medications?
Yes, there's no evidence, I don't believe, of noncompliance in this case. And while the commissioner points out that in, I believe it's the second-to-last treatment note from the treating psychiatrist, the plaintiff was very happy, indicating that the new regimen of medication was perfect, which was the first time that she indicated that. During that same evaluation, she indicated, however, the medication made her sleepy. And then in her testimony, she testified she had to lay down 2 or 3 times a day because of the side effects of the medication. So it appears once the medication was properly adjusted to alleviate the mental health symptoms, then the claimant was so sleepy that she had to lie down for 2 or 3 times every day. But in addition, the last treatment note actually goes back and includes some mental health limitations again. So under the 20 CFR 404.15.27, ALJ is supposed to weigh the factors in the regulation in deciding whether or not to give greater weight to the opinion of the treating psychiatrist. And it states that generally the opinion of a treating physician or psychiatrist is entitled to greater weight than the opinion of a non-examining and non-treater. And that this court has held in Gudgel versus Barnhart that the contrary opinion of a non-examining doctor by itself does not constitute substantial evidence contrary to the treater. And I think that's what we have here. We have Dr. Rosenfeld looking at the evidence and saying, I don't think it's quite as severe as what the treating psychiatrist stated. But under those circumstances, the regulation states that the treating psychiatrist's opinion should be given greater weight.
Is hotel cleaner the only job that the vocational expert said she could perform?
Well, he talked about a parking lot attendant also, which was a curious job because the plaintiff didn't have a driver's license, never had.
The idea is this would be the person who sits in the booth and...
Yes, he talked about that job also, indicating, though, that person would have to deal with customers and if there was an accident, would have to deal with that, fix the machines and things like that.
Hotel cleaner, he means a maid, the person who cleans the rooms?
I believe so, yes, Your Honor. Okay. Thank you very much.
Ms. Kleinman?
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Ann Kleinman on behalf of the Commissioner.
How can she be a maid in a hotel? That's a hard job. That's a strenuous job. You know, they strip the beds every morning and.
According to the vocational expert, given the RFC finding that the ALJ ultimately included in his decision, and her age, education, and past work experience.
Obviously, she has difficulty walking and so on, and I don't understand that. I can see sitting in a booth taking tickets, what have you, handing out tickets. But being a hotel maid sounds like a strenuous job.
Well, the ALJ...
It's continuous work, you know, and...
The ALJ found...
Rubbing floors, and does she do that at home? In her own home? What does she do?
Does she scrub floors in her own home? No, not that I know of. But the ALJ found that she wasn't limited other than 6 hours of standing and walking. and she could lift 20 pounds. And based on her abilities, as the ALJ found, and age, education, and past work experience, the VE said she could do the job of hotel cleaner. And counsel does not dispute.
When she found that she can lift 20 pounds, is that she was given a test and she lifted 20 pounds?
I don't believe she was given a test.
Well, how on earth can you figure out whether someone can lift 20 pounds without asking the person to lift 20 pounds?
Well, it is the ALJ's duty to make an RFC finding.
Oh, come on, please. I don't get that. If you want to know how much a person can lift, you give the person the weight. Otherwise, how could you possibly know? I mean, I'm sure she couldn't lift 600 pounds, right? That's fair. But you give her 10 pounds, if she can lift that, say, well, let's see if you can lift 20 pounds. I suppose that's how it works.
No physician...
I don't understand these things. I don't understand you.
No physician...
You serious that you can look at a person and say, well, I think you can lift... I think you can lift 20 pounds. Yeah. You can't be serious in suggesting that, can you, or are you?
Yes.
I believe this.
It is plaintiff's burden to establish her limitations. No physician imposed any limitations.
You're saying that the ALJ could have said, well, I think she can lift 100 pounds. And it's the burden on her to show she can't. Is that what you're suggesting? What's the meaning of burden of proof?
It is the claimant's burden to establish that she has the limitations that cause her to be disabled.
Where this 20 pounds came from?
The ALJ explained why he reached or she reached the RFC finding that she did.
How did she reach the 20-pound finding?
Based on the lack, and the same thing with the back, the lack of evidence of a
but if there's no evidence, how do you get to 20 pounds? Why 20 pounds? Why not 100 pounds?
The ALJ has to make an RFC finding. There are cases in which there is no opinion. This is one of them. No one limited her. So the ALJ had to make a determination on her own.
But how? What is the basis for a 20-pound finding?
Lack of X-ray abnormalities other than quote-unquote minimal degenerative arthritis, the lack of knee X-ray abnormalities, the lack of any studies to document osteoporosis, the normal physical exam findings, Dr. Villanueva's exam findings, which he said everything was normal from a musculoskeletal perspective. He also said that Ms. Scott could walk 50 feet when he asked her to. The ALJ also relied on the 2007 exams that only showed complaints of pain on straight leg raising and some tenderness in the back. There was no reflex loss, sensory loss, motor loss, muscle atrophy, limited range of motion. All the typical findings that we see in these back pain cases didn't exist here. There was very little evidence. There was very little treatment. There were very few complaints. It is plaintiff's burden to establish that she has the limitations. She did not satisfy that burden of proof. Counsel argues that the ALJ didn't consider or properly consider the diagnosis of bipolar disorder. A diagnosis itself doesn't say anything about the severity of an impairment, and a diagnosis itself doesn't say anything about the limitations that flow from that impairment. The real issue is what is the RFC? What are the limitations that flow from the impairment? And here, Dr. Rosenfeld opined that the claimant had some moderate limitations in concentration and had some problems.
She testified that bending over, mopping, and carrying grocery bags causes back pain. Is that one of the is that one of the points at which the ALJ made a negative credibility finding?
The ALJ did not completely reject her complaints of back pain. I think that seems...
Did not what?
Did not completely reject the complaint of back
pain. Well, did she reject that particular testimony?
The ALJ rejected the complaints to the extent that they prevented her from standing and walking less than 6 hours a day.
And if she has back pain mopping, how is she going to be a housemaid? I don't understand.
We don't know that the job of house cleaner or hotel cleaner requires her to mop.
Oh,
and,
please.
And?
You've been in a hotel, I'm sure. Of course they mop. They mop the floor of the bathroom, right?
Well, again, the VE testified that she could perform that job, and counsel does not dispute that fact. Therefore, counsel waived it. Counsel had suggested that the commissioner engaged in some post hoc rationalization regarding the hand tremors, but that's not accurate. The commissioner did not argue that the inconsistencies in Ms. Scott's statements regarding hand tremors formed a basis for the ALJ's credibility finding. Instead, the commissioner merely mentioned the inconsistency in response to an argument that counsel had raised, wherein he stated that the ALJ didn't discuss the hand tremors at all in evaluating her RFC. So this was not an improper post hoc rationalization. Counsel suggests that the claimant had bipolar disorder and says that she had mood swings. Mood swings are not the same.
Do you use a cane?
She uses a cane, it appears, for balance or for her knees, not for her back. And she sometimes...
Yeah, can you be a hotel maid and use a cane? I mean, I've been in a lot of hotels. I've never seen a maid with a cane.
Your Honor, even if she couldn't do the hotel cleaner job, the vocational expert testified that she could still do a significant number of parking lot attendant jobs, as you
parking
had previously
attendant.
Mentioned. And as
That's
you
just mentioned. Sitting in a booth. Is that what you, is that your impression of a parking lot attendant?
I do believe that the VE
not
said
driving.
It would.
It's not parking cars.
Oh no, he said it would accommodate a sit stand option. It this is a much less strenuous job.
But the ALJ didn't talk about that. The ALJ stuck with the hotel cleaner.
The ALJ said hotel cleaner, but the finding that she could perform a significant number of jobs is still there. That's still the basis for the ALJ's decision. So whether it's hotel cleaner or parking lot attendant.
But we don't actually know whether the ALJ thought she could be a parking lot attendant. Well, you think it's a fortiori, since a hotel cleaner's job is more strenuous. Therefore, all lesser jobs are incorporated by reference, by implicit reference. Okay, well, thank you very much, Ms. Kleinman. Mr. Schultz, do you have anything further?
I believe the plaintiff met her burden of proof because the ALJ found she has a severe medically determinable impairment of low back pain and arthritis, and then the plaintiff testified that she could only lift a gallon of milk but not two, that she could only stand for 30 minutes at a time, walk two blocks, used a cane, carried it all the time, had to use it two or three times a week. So that meets her burden of proof. It's then the ALJ can find her not credible, which is what happened here. But then again, that leaves that evidentiary deficit with no medical opinion as to what this set of limitations would be expected to cause in terms of...
Where did the 20 pounds come from?
ALJ
did
just...
Did the doctor
just,
say I no. tested her? I,
no, there's no test.
I have weights in my office. I make my patients lift.
No, Your Honor. And, in fact, there's no medical opinion that Ms. Scott could lift 20 pounds or be on her feet for 6 hours a day in this case. And in terms of, like, Dr. Villanueva's evaluation, the fact that a person can walk for 50 feet without using a cane doesn't on its own translate into that person being able to stand and walk for 6 hours a day. So, again, the ALJ kind of makes an illogical leap or an unreasonable leap from those findings to the ability to perform light work. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. Thank you to both counsel. Next case.